Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the October 3rd, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. This is your co-host, Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Doing great, Chase. Good to have the football team still undefeated after the win over ASU, and things definitely seem to be looking up on the basketball recruiting front as well. So yeah, a few things we will touch on.
Yeah, what should we talk about first, basketball or football?
We can start with basketball, I guess, just with some of the breaking news here.
Yes. So I think we are going to, and we'll write this on the message board as well, but we are going to officially project the USCHoops.com is going to officially project the USC basketball recruiting class for 2023. Now, we're going to do this with the proviso that things could be added to this class, and if something truly unexpected, something like a health issue or a grade issue or something like that, that could change things. But we have a projection for our class, and I guess we can start with news today that and things have definitely been going in this direction. There's been lots of hints about this, but there is a recruit that had been projected, had been crystal balled to a different school, North Carolina State, by several of the prognosticators. And it now looks, and we will project, that this recruit will be a member of the 2023 USC recruiting class. Why don't you tell us about him, Nick?
Yeah, this is Silas Demery Jr., Combine Academy kid from Charlotte. Just transferred there very recently, but we've discussed him before. He's like a 6'4 kind of combo guard. I think probably the plan is to have him as like a second point guard on the court his freshman year, and then maybe actually take the reins of the point guard spot if Isaiah Collier does commit and join him in the class and become a one and done. He hasn't committed yet, but he is committing this Friday, and signs seem to be pointing towards USC. With respect to his game, I made a post on the site about this, but he is very quick twitch, son of a football player, really tough, good shooting mechanics, really good from the free throw line and mid-range and in. Still needs to kind of expand his range to three, but he definitely seems capable of it. And then in terms of defense, he is very good on the ball and you know, shows decent off-ball instincts as well. So definitely has the projection of a very good defender. I'll just, Chase, throw it back to you. Feel free to add anything that you think on Silas.
Yeah, and I've talked about him before as well. I think my big takeaway was just his kind of defensive intensity skills, ball hawking and otherwise. Now, I had compared him, and I have compared him to D'Anthony Melton, although the defensive skill set is different. So I don't want to confuse people. Melton was very much like an elite, and he is an elite off-ball defender. He gets into passing lanes, he can steal the ball. He also, when it comes to loose balls, I've never seen anyone better getting to loose balls than D'Anthony. He is not as elite when it comes to guarding on ball, particularly like opposing point guards. So you had Nick in earlier comps kind of said, look, he's a little bit more like Jonah. We're now talking about Silas now. He's a little bit more like Jonah Matthews, and in that he's a really good on-ball defender. And I agree with that, although I think he's potentially a step better than Jonah as an on-ball defender. He's not, does not have the jump shooting skills that Jonah has, but he has different offensive skills. He has really, really strong slashing skills. Has pretty good vision, can get the ball to teammates. You know, he is, I'm always very skeptical of claims of someone's a combo point guard. Like I've heard that described to like Bronny James. Bronny James is not a combo point guard. He's really just an undersized swing man. He's an undersized three.
Yeah.
But Silas is a true, to the extent they exist, he's a true combo guard. He's not a super great 3-point shooter right now. But he does have a nice jumper within inside the arc. He can score, and he can also – he can give you serious minutes at point guard right off the bat. And then I think eventually as things roster turns over, he will be the full-time starting point guard at USC, I believe.
Yeah, and I think you have to feel pretty good. Like, if Collier's a one-and-done and Demery is your point guard for the next 3 years, I think you're feeling pretty good about that if you're USC.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Okay, well, let's go on to our second projected player in the recruiting class. Now, I'm trying to find the commitment because there was an announced commitment date on this player from Georgia. And I know it's this month, and I can't quite pin it down, but he was on campus this past weekend for the game on a second official visit. He's a big, and he's a teammate of another target we're looking at. So the second USCHoops.com second projection into the USC basketball recruiting class of 2023 is Arrington Page. Nick, what are your thoughts on Arrington?
Yeah, 6'9", 220-pound center. He can kind of play like the four and the five. I know he shot like spot threes, like pick and pop threes in AAU. And he's also caught lobs from Isaiah Collier out of pick and roll. So there's some versatility there. Has a pretty good length, decent rim protecting abilities, although he's not like, elite in that regard, but just seems like a solid four-year big that's going to rebound and, score several points, has decent touch, and just the kind of guy you want on your roster going into the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I think absolutely, and in fact, he was being recruited by a staple of the Big Ten, Indiana. That relationship kind of frayed over time. He was then looking at Cincinnati a little bit, but we will project that he will join the USC recruiting class for 2023. He's I actually think he's kind of a nice, could be a nice counterpart to Kajani Wright, even, because he brings a little bit different skill set to the table. Wright's more of a bruiser. Page can play tough, but he's a little more athletic, a little bit of more dynamic in spots. So, and there's also, you'll see him at times if he'll get the ball, there's like an open lane, he can drive to the basket. That's not a specialty, but it's something he can do. Sought after player right now. He's ranked by 24/7 on their composite number 52. They have him at number 60. So he's somewhat more acclaimed on other rating services, but still a top 60 player, and who had legitimate offers from schools like Indiana, Miami, Cincinnati, we mentioned Missouri, and we understand, Alabama, Florida. So there were some big time offers here. And I think this is a really, really nice get for USC.
Yeah. What do you think about him versus Devin Williams? Because I know there was kind of that discussion going around.
Yeah. I mean, they're completely different kind of, at this stage in their career, at this stage, they're just completely different players. Devin is taller, not nearly as thick, has a more reliable jumper, I believe. Now, I say that knowing that I'm overly swayed by that AAU game when they played the West Coast Elite, and he had the best performance that night on the court. Other games, I have not been as impressed, obviously, with Devin Williams, and for a long time, I did not necessarily want SC to recruit him. I'd prefer to have Page, quite frankly. Page is just, he's more of a kind of a traditional college basketball big that's going to be very effective over several years. The guys in the 6'8", 6'9" range, broad shoulders, but with athleticism. Those are, those are kind of just the staples of college basketball for time immemorial. Devin Williams is a little bit more of like what you would call like a hood ornament type of recruit. He's like 6'11", wiry, is not a banger, doesn't really have great hops, which is one of my concerns about him. Now, Page is not a super, super leaper either, but he definitely can get up a little bit better than Williams. So, I like Page, and I like him just as like your, just that meat and potatoes classic college basketball big.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Like, I think Devin has a better chance of playing in the NBA, actually, just given like his frame and potential to like defend the rim. Even though I don't think he's a NBA player at the end of the day. But just to kind of put like Paige into perspective, right? Like, he's rated like around 50, 60, like you said. Kajani Wright was a composite 49. So he's kind of not quite at that level, but very close to it. And definitely below like Evan and Isaiah level, but certainly higher than like, Harrison Hornery and Nick Rakosevich and a lot of the other kind of multi-year players that they've had.
Absolutely. And by the way, I think if you were going to kind of start the rankings, one of the deals with Kajani Wright was he was very highly ranked earlier in his career than, we go through COVID, people didn't see him as much. He kind of came out of that. He'd slipped some in the rankings, but then kind of also kind of stabilized his position. There are certain things that he had tried to do when he was younger in high school, like shoot outside, that didn't really kind of stick as much, especially playing at Sierra Canyon where he had to play center. So if his entire ranking, when I'm talking now about Kajani Wright, was based upon like his, his last AAU season and his senior year of basketball, I think you'd see a very similar ranking to Paige. Paige kind of flew up the rankings list during this past AAU season. I think before this, I'm not even sure how well known he was at all. Before he went on from June 13th, he was composite number 164. And then everyone did their re-rankings in late June, June 24th, he had jumped to number 50. So he was a latecomer to a top 100 ranking. And he got in pretty solidly into the top 60 when he did that. So, he missed a lot of games with Isaiah Collier in the AAU season. I have to look back and see how that affected his stats, but I think when he was flying up the charts, he was playing with Collier.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've seen the stats. He did worse.
Yeah.
And that part of that is, maybe on him getting like having Collier drag his ranking up to an extent, but then it also just kind of shows how good Isaiah Collier really is.
Yeah. And speak of the devil, the final player at this point that USCHoops.com is going to project into USC's 2023 recruiting class is, and no surprise, and hopefully we won't have to talk about this too much longer, but I know he's not committing until November 16th, Isaiah Collier. I'll let you start, Nick.
Yeah, 6'3", 190-pound point guard. I think we've broken down his game kind of at will over the last several months here, but it definitely seems like this recruitment is coming to a close. And I think both of us would agree, like, this, out of anybody in the 2023 class, if you could take any single player for the year, it would probably be Isaiah Collier. So really excited about potentially getting him, point guard, pass first. Physically developed, there's going to be no strength issue transitioning to the college game, and just knows how to run a team and knows how to put up stats but also put up meaningful stats and impact winning. So he seems like a very complete player that might not have the highest ceiling, but certainly is going to be an elite level college player for a year.
Yeah, he's going to walk on to college basketball as ready to play as any true freshman coming straight out of high school you're ever going to find. Just to go over his ranking history, he had been always in the kind of the 20s since the summer of 2020, in fact. In April, when the AAU season started for 2022, you started to see a big difference in his ranking. Initially, between April and May, he jumped up to the top 10. And then between July and the final rankings in September, he jumped all the way up to number one. So that's a reflection of just how, it was just very, very clear during the AAU season that he was the best player, certainly in terms of making impact on his team, the best player in the EYBL, which is the premier AAU circuit. So he was the best player in that circuit. And this is just this will be a tremendous player to plug into USC's recruiting class.
Right. So we've touched on those three. It definitely seems like these three are by far the most likely recruits
Well,
in
they're
the
more than the
class.
most likely. We are projecting them
We
to.
are projecting the USChoops.com projection right here.
Yes. Now, to take it beyond that, will there be more players? One of the interesting things now with the way the current roster is situated, because of Vince's health issue, and we brought on the European player from Russia. We now currently have 12 players on scholarship, technically, which includes Vince. And only one of the 12 players will be technically out of eligibility after this season, and that's Drew Peterson. Now, Boogie Ellis will have played four full seasons, assuming he plays a full season this season, will have played a full four full seasons of college basketball. So you're not finding a ton of guys willing to play a fifth full season of college basketball, although I think Drew is doing that this season. I'm doubting that he would stick around after this year, so that would open up another spot on the roster. There's health issues, obviously, with Vince's. So it's unclear just how many open roster spots we'll have. You always have transfers as well, and I hate to, you don't want to go down the road of trying to project transfers, but we do have, for example, we have Ozias Sellers, who I know the coaches really like, and then we also have Malik Thomas on the roster, who didn't have a great first year. I have heard he's looked better so far this year, but they kind of are like the exact same type of player. I mean, they're both twos and can't really play any other position. So it's and then we're bringing in we'll be bringing in Demery to go with that roster. So I'm not sure how many roster spots we'll have. I'm guessing we'll have at least four, but we can't be sure about that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like you have a lot kind of at the two and the three spots, right? Like if you're projecting Demery as like the two right next to Collier, at least for the first season, you're talking about Demery, Thomas, Sellers, kind of Kobe Johnson, kind of Reese, and kind of Trey White, like all at the two and the three spots. Really seems overloaded there. And you'd expect, I think, probably one to two transfers out of that group.
And now, if we were to get an extra spot on the roster, I think the way it probably looks is we'd probably want to target somebody who is like a big three man. It's like a three, maybe you could play some four, but is like a true three. And if that's the case, we would be certainly trying to continue to recruit Cody Williams very hard. Now, I don't know if we have a chance of getting him, but that would be somewhere I think the coaches would be looking, is my guess.
Yeah, no, I know. I like Jalen Stewart quite a lot. He is going to UConn, so that's no longer an option. Cody Williams, like you said, he's a very big wing. Can probably play four if you need him to, but he's kind of that combo forward-ish spot. He's also just really good, right? You're kind of at the point, I think, where if you have your core three. If you're going to add to that, you kind of just want to search for the best players. And, if they work out, they work out. If they don't, they don't. And you can save that spot to potentially get a transfer if you have room, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Although that the our ability to get transfers for this upcoming season is going to be interesting, because it appears that we have whatever issues we had with NIL, I think we've come a long way with that, and maybe we'll be able to be much more involved in the transfer market than we were this past off season. Because obviously we did very well in the transfer market the year that Evan Mobley came on board and COVID hit. So, and look, a lot of this is up in the air. I don't know if Cody Williams is even realistic at this standpoint. But yeah, I think there's the idea to have a player kind of in that spot makes sense. Now, if it is confirmed that Vince will no longer be able to play basketball for USC, at least, which would be horrible, but you know, it's a possibility we'd probably find out by the end of the season, then I think you try to circle back and thinking, you start thinking about maybe another big. Now, I don't know who will still be on the board at that point. I think we'd have a great story to sell to potential recruits at that point in time. Obviously, there's been a long kind of song and dance with Isaiah Miranda. It's still not clear to me where he's going to end up. I know Louisville and Texas are sniffing around now. I know Georgetown had been a place he'd been looking, but I don't know if he's ready to end that recruitment. And I don't know if the coach is still interested, quite frankly. And then, you know, there had been rumors for, you know, a bit of time about Aaron Bradshaw, who is one of the top bigs in the country. So I'm not sure where we're, if Vince won't be able to continue, what our options will be if we try to replace him on the roster.
Right. I don't either. Yeah, it's a great question. And you might not have resolution there for a while. So, you know, kind of looking back on it too, right? Like the coach's strategy of not wanting to have a point guard with multiple years of eligibility join the team kind of paid off, right? Like lucky or not, like it kind of worked out with the way the call of your recruitment looks like it's turning out.
Yes, that's how it appears. That's absolutely how it appears. All right. We're going to turn to basketball here. Before we do that, do you want to, anything else you got on? I was turning to basketball, turn to football. Anything you got left on basketball before we move on?
I just think this core represents a really impressive recruiting class for the school. I do think Demery is still underrated by the recruiting services. I think Page is probably properly rated. And I think Collier is probably going to be the most impactful freshman in the country next year. So it would be a damn good recruiting class for USC.
It would. And it would really fill needs like almost no recruiting class SC has ever had. Okay, let's talk about some games from last week. We don't have a ton of time here, but very briefly, UCLA covered at home. You know, I was wondering about this, you know, UCLA.
You had it.
These are these strange wins that UCLA pulls out earlier in the season. And then as the season goes on, their wins sometimes get less impressive, but look, you got to hand it to them. They're 5-0. Granted, their first four games were rather incredibly weak opponents, but they're 5-0. And Washington is a ranked team that had just come off beating Michigan State. So yeah, that's a impressive win for UCLA at home. Okay. I know we talked a little bit about Michigan, Iowa. I think we both, thought Iowa would probably cover that. I think it was a 10-point spread and Michigan covered. So we didn't do hot on that. I think we both, if I remember correctly, I think we both liked Oklahoma State and what was almost a pick'em game. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we both had that one right. One kind of comment on UCLA too, like that Washington win over Michigan State's looking really bad now. Michigan State is terrible. They got blown out by Minnesota. But you know, credit to UCLA for showing up, and hopefully they give Chip Kelly another extension. That'd be phenomenal.
Okay. All right. We didn't talk about this, but man, Missouri really played Georgia well for about 2.5 quarters and then kind of just slowly crumbled. And it was almost sad by the end because like Missouri had actually had chances to even win the game at the end. And they were just completely overpowered. Look, Georgia's just a much better team, but Missouri was actually able to give them a game, turn something into an interesting game for, almost four quarters. So credit there to the Tigers. Alabama on the road has one of their, you know, most impressive performances on the road that we've seen since probably pre-pandemic. So they won at Arkansas by 23 points. I think at the end, I just said, I'm not going to pick this game because it's just like this, like 17.5 point spread made no sense to me and it looked like a trap. And apparently it was.
Yeah, Arkansas probably shouldn't give up 280-plus yard runs in the fourth quarter to blow the cover, but it's the way it goes sometimes.
Yep. So Clemson did cover, or did, what was the line on that one? It was a 10-point game.
It was 7, I think.
Yeah, so they covered. I think we both thought this was right about this, right in the range. We weren't sure about it. But, you know, props to Clemson. They're still undefeated. And they played two of the toughest teams on their schedule, Wake Forest and Clemson. We should probably mention Wake Forest beat Florida State pretty convincingly. That was probably my worst pick of the week because they really handled Florida State well, and I picked Florida State. Ole Miss in Kentucky. I think you really thought Kentucky was going to maybe win this one outright. What was the line though on this? Was this the 7-point line?
They were laying 7, so Kentucky
so
cover.
You would have done that. You would have gotten the cover. By the way, this is a game where, literally, I'm watching the game. I see old Kentucky throw what I think is like the winning touchdown pass. I get hurried into the kitchen to something that just happened with my daughter, like dropping some food or something, come back out. And the next thing I see, there's a turnover by Kentucky. And I was like, that's strange. They just scored a touchdown. Did they go for two? That makes no sense. But no, the touchdown was called back on, you know, on a motion penalty. And then they turned the ball over. They could have kicked the field goal to send it to overtime, but Lane Kiffin pulls it out and Ole Miss is 5-0. So, you know, Lane Kiffin's posting some good scores these past couple of years. Utah takes care of business against Oregon State. I think that was a game where I just said I thought that Utah would probably end up covering just because Oregon State was going on the road. You were very bullish on Utah because you pointed out Oregon State, it was terrible on the road last season. I didn't realize how bad, but you were absolutely spot on. By the way, this is another game where there was a point in the third quarter where Oregon State had outgained Utah, but had just made, had committed, you know, thrown a pick six and had other bad turnovers, which seems to be a pattern for them now. And then Oregon State kind of just collapses in the fourth quarter. So this game was a lot closer than the 26-point margin that it appeared at the end for most of the game.
Yeah, and I think Chance Nolan either got pulled or got hurt. I think he got hurt.
I'm not sure. He came out of the game after threw two interceptions, including a pick six. So I'm not sure. I think he might have gotten pulled, but then his replacement threw a really terrible pick in the end zone as well. It was kind of some ugly choices there by Oregon State. Okay, I messed up on this one as well. Oregon at home against Stanford. That was a 17.5-point line. Oregon ends up winning by 18, so they cover. I had picked Stanford to keep it much closer, so I just did not get that game right.
David Shaw 0 for his last 10 against the spread as well.
Wow. If I had known he was 0-9 going in, I maybe would have I don't know. Yeah, you're much better in knowing these spread things. Oklahoma. I don't know how much there. I'm not even sure we discussed this game much.
Man, I think I had the Sooners bouncing back. Whoops.
It's not the salad days of Lincoln Riley anymore, I guess. Then Minnesota comes out, and this one really surprised me because I don't even think we picked this, but they lose at home to Purdue by 10 points. You know, that's a game you really, as you're a Minnesota fan, you got to win that game. So that's kind of a bad look there. I guess that brings us to USC. What to say about this? Positives, Caleb Williams really bounced back, played much, 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 much better this week than last. He had a couple bad plays in a row at one point. There's still points in the game, you know. So we had our first turnover of the season when he threw an interception in the end zone. The play before that, he threw this like sideline ball about 12 yards downfield that Jordan Addison just made a phenomenal catch, getting a foot down on the sideline up in the air. I don't know if you're on the replay, you can see it. It was almost insane. Mario Williams is just like wide open on a post route in the end zone. I mean, just he just, you know, Caleb just totally missed him. And I'm worried a little bit about how often that's happening. I it was hard to tell against Oregon State because we didn't have a lot of great views of it, but I did see that also against Fresno State. So some of his, I'm a little concerned that sometimes he's not seeing the field as well as he should. That being said, man, he was really good. He escaped pressure in the pocket repeatedly, made things happen. We had 9 possessions, including the final possession of the game to just kneel the ball down. So on 8 possessions that he actually controlled, we had 6 touchdowns and then that pick in the end zone. So we were moving the ball the entire time. Before we talk about defense, just what are your thoughts on Caleb Williams?
Yeah, it's great bounce back performance. Like you said, the pocket mobility was really big because the O-line had a lot of busts in that game where, you know, he'd have a rusher in his face and he'd evade pressure and either make a throw on the run or he'd scramble for a first down. So just goes to show the value of having a mobile quarterback.
Yeah. Second half, or no, talk about the defense. Tale of two halves. The first half, yeah. it was just embarrassingly bad. I mean, just terrible. You're coming, and this is a team in Arizona State now. Yet they've got a lot of players from Southern California who want to show up. You know, their family's going to be there. They want to show up and have a big game. But my gosh, I mean, this is a program in crisis. We're supposed to be like a top 6 school nationally, and our defense could not stop them at all in the first half. Like, there's almost like nothing we could do. We didn't force them to punt. I think they're only, you know, we forced a field goal attempt one time. There just weren't a lot of possessions in the first half. Just not an impressive performance in any way in the first half. Second half, we come out completely different story. Second half is when we had we threw the pick in the end zone. So we should have had 14 points just to start the second half. We had another early TD in the fourth quarter. That entire time, defense is just stoning Arizona State. They couldn't do a thing. They punted 3 times during this period. And this was before they turned the ball over. So that defensive effort in the start of the second half was something we need to see this now, the entire game going forward. Just completely different defense. Later in the fourth quarter, Arizona State, you know, they scored a couple times. One of the drives, I have to say, was just kind of ridiculous. It was just all penalties called on us, and I think they were ticky-tack to just bad calls. And so I'm not sure what to make of that drive. But overall, I think, you know, the defense played really, really well in the second half.
Yeah, totally agree. First half was bad. Second half was good. You know, the drive with penalties on the same drive, like Damani Jackson dropped a pick and then the guy caught it on this third and long conversion. So there were so many like different opportunities to stop that drive. They scored, right? But I was really impressed with the defense in the second half. So they got to play the complete game, and they played like, you know, really well against Oregon State, but, you know, hopefully they've got the potential to be pretty good. It looks like not elite, but, you know, they're going to need that. They're going to need to play at least like a B+ game on defense, I think, to beat Utah.
Yeah. Yeah. So just really briefly, at halftime, the score is 21-17. Arizona State's coming out, getting the ball, so they could have taken the lead. And here are the possessions to start the second half. Arizona State, 6 plays, 4 yards, punt. USC, 7 plays, 65 yards, interception in the end zone. Arizona State, 3 plays, 6 yards, punt. USC, 9 plays, 50 yards, touchdown. Arizona State, 3 plays, 6 yards, punt. USC, 8 plays, 60 yards, touchdown. So between the start there, 3 possessions for Arizona State, 12 plays, 16 yards. Actually, I think the last one was a negative 6 yards. So it was actually, I think, 4 yards. Yeah. 12 plays, 4 yards. USC, 24 plays for 175 yards. So 175, we start out in the second half, 175 yards to 4, just to show you how dominant it was. And the funny thing is 175 yards to 4, and we outscored them 14-0 only, so because we threw the pick in the end zone. So it was more dominant than it actually it seemed. Or than the score indicated. Okay, we got to run. Any last thoughts before we get out of here?
Just all quickly comment that the stops and the yardage, that really matters. It's much better to have, you know, a drive where you get a three and out as opposed to give up 70 yards and then you get a pick, in my opinion. So really good to see the, you know, total yardage be drastically in SC's favor in the second half. And good win, and looking forward to the Wazoo game.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll try to do another pod this week to kind of just talk about maybe the games this weekend if we can get a chance. Otherwise, we're going to do a blog or a post on the site with our our projected class. So, all that said, fight on, everybody.
Fight on.